finding. There are five elements to it, and spread throughout is one thing that comes back, and it has to do with having a formally defined cost allocation plan. And that is now in its final stages of completion and will be provided shortly to the U.S. Administration on Aging and the Department of Health and Human Services. A second one was, and these have to do with interactions with the Commission's grantees. We have 63 grantees across the state. And that was that that each grant award should have a certification in it that assured by signature, this I'm looking at page, this it begins on page 13 of the audit, that assured that each grantee was not in a situation where they had been suspended from receiving federal funding. So in our grant awards that began as of June 1st of this year, we do have that provision in the grant award. And then also relating to the interface with grantees was a provision that we would, at the conclusion of each grant year, notify the grantees of the specific amount of federal funding that they had received by the conclusion of the fiscal year. And those notices have gone out timely, and the most recent ones that went out were for a record of the federal funds received in the fiscal year 99 that closed on June 30th. So we are now in a process of complying with those recommendations, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions? Senator Kelly.
On the fiscal note,
yes.
That $1,015,000, was that in the base from 2009? Or excuse me, for fiscal year 2000?
Are you referring to the Mental Health Trust Authority funding?
No. Well, I was just reading the fiscal note where it says there will be no fiscal impact because the costs are already included in the governor's budget. Was that in the fiscal year 2000 budget? So you're saying it's part of the base already?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Senator Green.
Yeah, I would like to know where you are on extricating the long-term care ombudsman and having that moved, if you've made any moves toward that.
Thank you.
Is that briefing sheet that I provided?
Okay. Through the chair, we provided an update on our work regarding that question, and it is, I believe, a part of your file. It's a chronology regarding the long-term care ombudsman consideration, and this has a sequence that began in 98-99 and led to our spending the interim period doing an extensive review of long-term care ombudsman considerations for a possible outstationing. We held detailed discussions with four organizations, two within government, two outside of government. The conclusion was that it would be that we would have the strongest office possible if the office did remain within government, as opposed to being outstationed in a nonprofit organization. We looked specifically at two in-state agencies, the State Ombudsman's Office and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The State Ombudsman's Office did a very intensive and very thorough review of the considerations that they thought were important to look at in terms of, number one, their ability to continue to provide basic services as they're now mandated, and number two, as it would relate to the rather unusual requirements for the long-term care ombudsman. Their conclusion was that it was not in the best interest of the health of the state ombudsman's office to seriously consider bringing that over. However, in their report, they did note that, of course, were that mandated by the legislature, they would very clearly be responsive to it. The second option we looked at was within the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, because when we look at the cases that the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Office has, well over 50% of them do relate to beneficiaries of the trust, primarily people affected by Alzheimer's, but not exclusively. The trust is actually in the beginning processes of creating regulations through which they will set up a redress or grievance mechanism for beneficiaries, but they're not quite there yet. So they remain open to the possibilities of further discussion on outstationing the long-term care ombudsman office there, but they felt it would be premature because they don't have that full picture formulated. So to conclude, what the commission did was to adopt an amendment to its bylaws, creating a standing long-term care ombudsman committee that exclusively or that excludes from membership any members of the commission that have any relationship with the Pioneer Homes, and have gone forward now. We have a search committee in effect, and it does include two members from the trust authority, and we will be and are actually conducting a recruitment right now.
Ms. Chairman, I won't be interested in seeing this go on until the long-term care ombudsman is moved out of the APUA.
Other discussion? Okay, thank you for your testimony. I have nobody else signed up. well.
We have another day.
There apparently is going to be objection to moving this out today. We need five to move it, so the bill will be set aside and we'll bring it up to the next. I would suggest that you work with Senator Green on her problems if we're going to go forward with this. Thank you. Okay, next we have Senate Bill 229, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. The prime sponsor is Senator Pierce.
Makes technical changes to Senate Bill 133 that the legislature passed last year. Just to refresh everybody's memory, Senate Bill 133 abolished the APUC and established a new commission, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, the RCA. Senate Bill 229 makes three changes to 133. The first change repeals the provision that Senate Bill 133 contained that statutory obligated the RCA to co-locate with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. The intention of this provision was to achieve cost savings through shared record storage facilities as well as clerical staff, copy machines, things like that. Department of Administration conducted a thorough review and determined that the economies of scale that they had hoped to achieve could not be realized, and that's primarily due to the current lease space that RCA is located is very cheap rent, and they are unable to accommodate both commissions in that building. Second change corrects a drafting error. Senate Bill 133 allowed the commission to employ hearing officers. What the commission actually needs is a hearing examiner. And the difference between the two is a hearing officer need not be an attorney, and a hearing examiner is an attorney. Hearing examiners are needed to adjudicate the legal matters during the RCA's hearing process. This requires them to act as a judge during the hearings, and they need to be proficient in judicial proceedings, rules of evidence, rules of the final revision clarifies that the RCA may employ and utilize mediators as well as arbitrators. That was the intent of Senate Bill 133, although the language is slightly unclear, and that has already been challenged, their authority. Mediation, just so everybody understands the difference, mediation is a less formal process than arbitration. Rather than having a decision that's forced upon the two parties, it's an informal process where people are encouraged to work together on find common ground. Those are the changes to Senate Bill 133. I'd be happy to entertain questions.
Other questions? You want to go ahead and speak to Amendment Number 1?
Amendment number one clarified language contained on page one, where we, the mediators and arbitrators was contained in on line 12, following accountants, comma, and other agents and assistants considered necessary. Other agents and assistants considered necessary was what we had originally intended. However, the language that we'd like to provide is following administrative law judges, comma, insert arbitrators, comma, mediators.
And that's conforming to page 2, line 22. Line
that's
10.
Correct.
Senator Parnell.
I move amendment number 1.
And amendment number 1 has been moved. Is there a discussion? Is there opposition to the adoption of amendment number 1? I would say this may require an insertion in the title also on line 1. At least it was in your sponsor substitute that you had this morning, I believe it was. So we may have to insert the arbitrator on page 1, line 1, before mediators, although the amendment does not indicate that, but we'll leave the drafters the discretion if that's what it requires. So is there opposition to amendment number 1? Hearing none, amendment number 1 has been adopted. Thank you. We do have on teleconference. Is there any other questions of the sponsor? Senator Pierce is here, too, if you have any questions of the senator. Okay. We have on teleconference Nan Thompson in Anchorage. You wish to testify?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm here this morning in Anchorage, and I listened carefully to what Mr. Carter said about the bill. I would support everything he said and urge the committee's passage of this bill. It could be fairly characterized as a cleanup bill to SB 133, and it makes some changes to the statute that I think are important to the administration of my agency. I'm available for questions if any of the members have any.
Okay. Senator Parnell.
Ready for a motion?
Yes.
Chair, I move Senate Bill number 229 is amended from the committee's individual recommendations in the zero fiscal note.
That means there's no questions. Okay, the motion is to move the bill from committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 229 moves from committee. Thank you. That brings us next to House Bill 112. House Bill 112 is an act establishing the Alaska Public Building Fund. We've heard this bill a couple times, or at least one time before. And it dominated my life the last little bit. Is Anna Lee here? No. Okay. What we requested at the last hearing of this is that we be provided a fiscal note showing the impacts of this bill, and I believe that all members have that in your packet, plus another bunch of documentation showing where the funds would be coming from and the application of the depreciation per building. So what I'm going to do is have the administration come up and walk us through their spreadsheet. And Jeanette, Representative James, did you wish to testify before us this morning?
Only if you have any questions.
Yes. I think we already heard the bill, and your staff did a good job introducing it to us. So is there any questions of the prime sponsor? Apparently there is. Would you join us at the table, please?
Or the agency people either, so.
Senator Green.
Yeah, Representative James, what happens if this does not pass?
We just keep on keeping on like we've been, I guess.
Is there any loss of funds to the state?
Well, according to the fiscal note, $783,000 in federal funds.
In federal funds, and that's because the feds require that there be an even.
That's right. We can't charge them rent if we don't charge rent across the board.
To your knowledge, is there any way that there could be an arbitrary nature to the fee that's designated for a different department or whatever? Yeah, I'm concerned that we're recreating the administrative fee that's charged back to agencies in the division, and I want to be sure we're not doing that with this.
Well, I'm trying to understand exactly what you're looking at. I kind of understand what you're talking about. In other words, the administrative cost of overseeing, are you talking about the administrative cost of overseeing the maintenance? Or are you talking about just moving money back and forth and it goes back to the same place again that it left? Is that what you're talking about?
No, in hearing conversations from various agencies and divisions currently, and perhaps departments, when they are charged a fee for an administrative charge back.
Like an RSA?
No. What is that called? In the current system, when the administrative fee that's charged, what is technology fee?
The DP charge back.
What is it called?
It's interagency receipts, I guess, but it's just a...
It's the chargeback that the department says, we're doing this amount of work for your agency, therefore we're charging your fee.
I understand what you're talking about.
I want to know if there's any way this could be arbitrary rather than you have X number of feet and here's the current rent and here's what's going to... Of all that whole thing, is there anything that could be arbitrary about this? And someone in some department say, we need to make more money off of this, therefore we're going to up this fee arbitrarily, not based on real facts or needs.
Well, according to my understanding of the whole purpose of this bill is to not have that happening.
Okay.
That there has to be an established rental rate. And I suspect that the rental rate will be different for each building because it's based on the cost of the building, including the maintenance or depreciation of the building. In order to be able to change the rent figure, they would have to change the values of things. And I suppose that would be within their parameters if you really, you know, I don't know how you can totally eliminate that. And maybe the department, who knows better what they do than I do, could tell me how, no, that can't happen. But it seems like there's always, whenever there's figuring to be done, there's always a little bit of manipulating of figuring one way or the other. So I don't think we can avoid that. However, I think we can avoid it on the spur of the moment, because once you establish what those numbers are, it'd be very difficult to change them without some good cause. So I think that your biggest fear, I think, is not there.
Representative James, you had time to look at the fiscal note?
I can't say that I understood it all, but I did look at it, and I do understand somewhat the numbers
Let me just focus you on personal services. Was it your intent that we should be hiring two people to carry out the duties of this piece of legislation?
Well, I would assume, from my understanding, that we wouldn't hire two new people. We'd have two people we'd put to do this job. But I don't know that that's the case or not, because if there's anybody doing this management of the maintenance issue, they're already doing it someplace already now, and maybe we should have fewer people doing it than they're doing it now. So, you know, that's my feeling on this issue. So I guess the answer to your question is no.
Thank you. Other questions of Representative James? Seeing none, thank you for joining us this morning. I'm sure you're welcome to stay around while we struggle through this. Zach, you and Keith want to join us. Introduce yourself for the record. And what I'd like is walk us through your summaries that you've created here. And I would also bring the members' attention. There is a CS in your file that I'm proposing that we adopt, and basically it limits the buildings, it inserts the language covered buildings, and then identifies covered buildings as only the 8 that we're going to be talking about in the spreadsheet, so that some of my fears about having a piece of legislation on the books that would apply to anything and down the road, any building that we have would be brought back to at least these 8 buildings that we're talking about in these spreadsheets. Senator Green.
Okay, and is that version D?
I don't know.
Okay. So you're saying then that if there were the acquisition of any other major piece of property, it would have to come back to the legislature for addition to this list?
It has nothing to do with acquisition. Anytime anything's added to the list, any existing buildings, or if we bought any buildings, anything different than this 8 would have to come back before the legislature.
Okay, that's it. But I didn't understand what you said.
I just wanted to limit it to here. This is apparently at best a pilot project. I understand why we're doing it. I think it had been good policy to have done this from the very get-go. I still have concerns about charging the agencies for depreciation and where that money is going to come from. But we're going to hear the answer to that this morning. So go ahead and introduce yourself and walk us through these things.
Thank you. I'm Jack Kreinhitter with the Office of Management and Budget, and on my left is Keith Gerken with the Department of Administration. Annalee McConnell is on her way over and will be joining us here in a minute or two. Mr. Chairman, I was planning to start with a fiscal note here, unless you have another preference.
No, anywhere, wherever you want to start.
What we've done here with the fiscal note is we had built this facility's rent proposal into the governor's FY 2001 budget request, and we're not planning to do this as a fiscal note, but we've had a request to essentially extract these rent-related budget transactions from the governor's budget and incorporate them in a fiscal note. So that's what we've done here. The 35 pages or so of backup are just the budget transactions to implement the rental program. The numbers shown on the front page there, the fiscal note, total operating of about $1.25 million, are the increments of non-general fund money, in other words, the authority that the departments need to receive and expend that non-GF money that they would be collecting in federal funds and other non-GF sources. The transfers of money from out of the Department of Administration and Department of Transportation to the agencies to pay rent are not reflected on the cover page since it's basically a wash, moving money from one department to another. Those are reflected in the attached transactions. Let's see. Keith, anything you want to add so far?
No, I guess maybe other than just quick clarification to confirm the questions asked to Representative James. It's true that the rates are all by building. Each building has its own rate calculation. And all the costs are actual expenses. And the methodology, the rules, if you will, that we're making the rent calculations under are based on federal O&B guidelines so that everyone's is auditable and fairly charged, and charged for no more than the actual cost that the state can demonstrate.
Mr.
Chairman.
Senator
Green.
Well, is there a method for estimating, a fair method of estimating what is going to be needed for the future? Is there a standard 1%, 6%, whatever, of the value of the building or something? That's the arbitrary figure that I'm worried about. And if you can tell me that in accounting terms or whatever, that's fine. I just want to know, what's the standard?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, some businesses do budget for maintenance using a kind of a formula. But in order to have a rate that you charge to federal agencies that they will agree to pay, it can only be based on actual costs. And in fact, at the end of the year, you actually do what they call a true-up, where you calculate your actual true expenditures, and if the rate you charged for that year was more or less, you have to adjust your next year's rent to equalize that. So you can't use a projection of what you want, what you would like to spend or ought to spend. It's based on what is actually budgeted and expended by building.
Can I ask you a question? What am I missing? I thought this proposal was in order to be preparing for the future and that we create something that builds the maintenance and improvement fund for the future. Is that not this bill?
It is this bill.
How can we do both then? If what I heard you say and what I understood you say.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, the one increment that is different is depreciation. Depreciation is a part of what can legitimately be charged for rent, which is, if you will, a theoretical calculation. It is a theoretical calculation that you have to demonstrate how you do it, and we've done it based upon the replacement costs of the buildings. And federal agency will pay for rent, which includes a calculation for depreciation. That really, depreciation is the new money, if you will, that we're injecting into these facilities that will allow us to keep up with the preventative maintenance and the renewal and replacement and fixing the things that are broken and replacing the things that are worn out. So, I mean, that is where we get additional funds, and that is the fiscal note reflects the new dollars that are leveraged or captured because we can now charge these non-general fund programs for that.
Mr. Green.
Can those figures be manipulated?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, I could go into how it's calculated. They cannot be arbitrary. I think that was the word you used earlier.
Right, right.
Your methodology for determining what is the depreciable basis of a building has to meet normal government accounting standards. And we have used, if you will, a regressed replacement value for the buildings. We've calculated that. Once it's set, it is the annual amount that you can charge for depreciation for that building until the depreciation is gone. If you have a 30-year life and you charge the 30th of that life, in the 31st year, it's gone. And it can only change over those 30 years to the extent that you make a new investment in the building. If you spend another $1 million on it, you can now depreciate that $1 million. But it's a calculation that cannot be manipulated. No. It's calculated, not manipulated.
So in 3 or 4 years, there's not going to be a bunch of agencies and departments and divisions coming up and say, my gosh, everything was going great, and then they did this rent thing, and now we can't afford the rent because it's taken interest out of our other functions. And that's...
Mr. Chairman, I agree that should not happen. The only way the rate's going to change is if some cost change, if they decide that they want to spend more on that building. If there's a conscious decision in the budget to make a bigger investment in that building, it would change the rate.
And that would be the agency or the division or the department's decision, not OMB or administration or anyone else.
It would be part of the budget process. So if it's an expenditure that is made out of a rental pool, it would have to be part of that budget request to spend more money on a particular facility.
Thank you.
If I might follow up on that, Senator Ferguson, Annalee McConnell, Office of Management and Budget. Senator Green, obviously, if the legislature does an unallocated budget reduction, for instance, and we have told agencies that they're now under this rent plan, there will be choices in the future because the rent will have to be paid. So it doesn't mean that we won't face those choices if you make budget cuts, but it won't be because of the rent plan. It will be separate, but some people may put those together in their mind, even though, in fact, the tough choices would be there whether there's a rent plan or not.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Wilkins.
Maybe by attempting to answer Senator Green, I can see if I understand this. As I understand this, you correct me now if I'm wrong, there's really three things that happen to guard against what you're saying. First is the rent has to be established by generally accepted accounting principles, which would define depreciation and draw certain checkoffs to establish rent. Second, in order to capture the $750,000 in federal money, we have to follow a certain circular called A-87, which then the federal government defines on what we can call a cost, which, of course, would also be depreciation. So that's the second level. Then the third level, if an agency feels that they're being treated unfairly, you're charging me too much rent, I have a system within the state government that I can, what amounts to grieve that assessment, and it goes through some sort of review and comes back with a decision. So are those three things correct? That's how I see this being set up.
Chairman, clearly the first two are correct. I'm not sure that the process of state government, there are grievances in our state constantly, and that there's certainly the process for questioning whether the calculation of it is correct, and part of the reason we're asking for an accountant position is because we have to be able to demonstrate to federal agencies, to other agencies, that the cost centers are correct, that the calculations are all correct. And so I can clearly, yes, an agency who feels the rate's not been correctly calculated has lots of opportunities to question that. I believe we also would have give agencies the option. This would not be a program which people, it's not a monopoly. If people don't believe the rent is fair in the building, we would not prohibit people from moving to another building if they can pay the cost of moving, or moving to a lease if they can pay that cost instead. There's lots of market opportunities out there that will be available to any agency who feels that the rent isn't right for them.
Let me back you up to Senator Wilkins' first comment that the rent rate would be established on general accounting practices. Now, I understand that depreciation would be, but your rental rate is on a cost basis, in that the actual cost of managing the building. I know the bill doesn't say that, but I think this brings us back to some of Senator Green's concerns that the bill doesn't say what the top end is. The top end is whatever somebody wants to put on as a rent fee. And the actual bar that you may not be able to jump over is when you start charging more rent than the general public might charge. If you were to go out for an RFP for a rental space, then you are creating a competition between the Department Administration's rental rate and private enterprise's rental rate. Now, I understand it's also not your intent to do that at this point in time, but there's nothing here to preclude that from happening. So it's not general accounting practices, unless general accounting practices are to figure a rent on cost plus depreciation. There's usually profit and a lot of other things involved in that. Annalee?
If I might, Senator Torkelson, we have a chart here which we had shared with Senator Torkelson. We have copies for the rest of you. This, you can just see from a distance, this is the rate at 88 cents a square foot that we would be charging agencies in the state office building, and just gives you some comparisons to other facilities in Juneau where the state, various agencies of the state, have rental space. And as you can see, because of profit margins and so on, and the market rate, the state office building would be considerably lower than what the agencies could get out on the street. I think everybody in the department certainly recognizes that, for instance, if utility costs go up next year because of a utility rate increase or whatever, and we're not able to compensate with sufficient energy conservation, for instance, there will be an increase in the cost of maintenance, just as if janitorial contracts or any other things go up over time. The same is true in the private sector as in this proposal here. So it's not a static rate that would never change, but certainly the budget pressures will keep us looking to do the maintenance of the buildings on an ongoing basis in as cost-effective a manner as we possibly can.
Mr. Chairman, I might add, I think that the existence of the market rate out there and the pressure that puts on the state to keep their rates down is a very healthy thing. I think if the state ever can't deliver a building at a rate under market, I think it should set off alarm bells, and we should be asking why that is.
I appreciate that. I was just going around about waiting to answer Senator Green's question when she said, can this be manipulated? And the answer is yes. And you may not be able to manipulate the actual depreciation part if you follow general accounting practices. You certainly could on, you know, any rate you wanted to get by this bill. You know, you're not limited to a rental rate based upon cost plus depreciation. You're based upon management fees. And I have a disagreement with you now about hiring two people to perform the functions of this bill. So that, you know, maybe next year that's four. So it can be added, other things can be added into the base, which maybe manipulation is not the correct word, but it's not a set rate. And there, it could go up or down based upon a lot of different pressures that would come for you guys to handle. Okay, let's work through this handout, the major handout that you gave us the other day, so the committee can understand the buildings. And particularly, I think, well, we didn't number these, but however you want to set it up, but I was thinking more of the spreadsheet kind of in the middle that talks about each building and what department would pay what. And then the final spreadsheet after that one, and then the one page that shows.
I'm sorry, I don't.
I still have a problem figuring out Now, I understand your explanation on where the money would come from for depreciation through the Atwood building and the relocation from the Frontier building. I have not had time to research the fiscal note on that to see what you have built into that base. So we're currently looking at that. But okay, go ahead, whoever.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that. If I could, I'd like to take just a minute to talk about the two new positions, since you had raised that question.
Sure.
If we could cover that first. You've got in your packets a position description and justification from Department of Administration. Chief Gerken can speak more to the details on that, but I just wanted to emphasize that these positions are non-general funded. They're basically those positions are what allow us to bring in about $1.5 million in new non-general fund money, a combination of federal money and other non-GF fund sources. Our view is that the existing staff in Department of Administration does not have essentially the spare time to take on this program. It is a significant workload. And I think those of you who have businesses, private sector operations, if you had the opportunity to hire two people at a cost of about $165,000 and they'd bring in $1.5 million in revenue, it would be a pretty easy decision for you, and that's really what we're looking at here. I recognize nobody likes adding even one or two positions in our current fiscal situation, but in some cases, as you know, you have to spend money to make money, and this is one where we have to spend a little bit of money to bring in considerably more money. So we feel these positions are necessary. It would be difficult to get this program going and operate it properly without those. Again, Keith can provide you more details. Any questions on that, Mr. Chairman, before we, or members, before we move on?
Yeah. explain your relationship between Department of Administration and Department of Transportation, public facilities. For example, the facilities manager. I think somewhere along the line I heard somebody make the comment that DOT doesn't have a facility manager. And if that's the case, then we can go take two or three of them out of their budget, I guess, because we're paying for it. But explain that relationship and how you envision this new position should be something that's going to interact with DOT.
Mr. Chairman, there is no fund today. There is no rental program today. So clearly there's a new dynamic and a new level of work, a new effort that doesn't exist today, either in DOT or DOA. The way we see the relationship between administration and DOT is that we're the fund managers. We're essentially acting as a building owner would for the rental pool facilities. And we have to take the big picture view of their long-term needs and the services and the management of space in those buildings. We see DOT essentially as our property manager in seven of those eight buildings. We already maintain the Atwood building. And they would essentially, we would essentially have a contract with DOT to deliver the maintenance services that they deliver today in those seven buildings. It's definitely going to have to be a cooperative relationship. They're the on-site people. They're the folks with their hands on the tools and on the building controls, and they do the daily services. But there is a level of work both from the financial side and from the building management side that isn't being done today to manage these buildings, if you will, almost like a single entity. They now have a individual rate, but the money all comes to one place and it has to be managed centrally. Clearly, my background is in construction and in design. I can see the need for the facility manager. Unfortunately, in my years of government, I've learned that it may be even more important to have the accountant. In all our discussions on this concept, most people have focused on the rate, how they calculate it, is it fair, what's the methodology. This is a significant accounting exercise in establishing cost centers and tracking costs and establishing these rates and dealing with audits. I mean, clearly, there's a level of accounting here that no one in our department is doing today. And I also believe the same is true in terms of providing overall building management. I think those of you who were on or followed the work of the legislature's Deferred Maintenance Task Force of a couple of years ago would agree that the state, state meaning executive agencies, court systems, university, we've not done a stellar job of maintaining our facilities. We see establishing rent and putting into the state's facilities a few market dynamics as being just one step of how to make them better. We though want to take this one step at a time. We want to do a good job, and we really don't think we can do a good job unless we get some people dedicated to paying attention to these buildings and the finances and managing it well.
Are you currently billing the federal government the costs, or these other agencies the costs, janitorial and other things, or just not depreciation?
It really depends, Senator Torgerson. There are some programs where a certain amount of facility cost has been built into what is recovered from the federal government, but that's much more limited than it could be. And the roughly $1.5 million that we've referred to in additional funds is on top of what is currently being collected. But there are many programs where we're simply not getting any of the federal dollars to which we would be entitled, even on a program that's a strictly cost reimbursement basis. In other words, a program that's not capped at the federal level. So whatever we are getting now is, I would say, relatively incidental rather than a major component.
Then why don't, I guess I don't understand the fiscal note then. My understanding is we're only collecting depreciation, that we're currently collecting the cost of, other than depreciation, pure cost. That's not the case?
Well, we do have the pure cost budgeted right now in, for instance, in the Department of Transportation, where we actually do the facility maintenance. So those costs are general funded costs right now in the agencies. We do, of course, have some agencies that are in leased space that may be federal programs that are now in a leased space, and there may be some reimbursement in that case. But for the buildings we're talking about here, the direct operating costs are budgeted as a general fund item in the Department of Transportation, or in the case of the Atwood Building, in the Department of Administration.
I guess I didn't hear the answer. Are we billing the federal government for any of the costs that are related to Department of Labor or whoever else we're going after, CSED, for their share of the cost of the space that they're doing now? Are we recovering the actual out-of-pocket costs for that?
In the buildings we're talking about here, we are not, as far as I know, billing the federal government. I thought you were referring generically as a state, do we bill the federal government for any facilities? And it is true that for some other buildings where we're leasing space, we may well be passing some of that cost on to the federal government. For these buildings, though, it's all general funded expenditure right now.
Senator Wilkins.
Mr. Chairman, maybe it would help me and perhaps the committee if we just took the fiscal note and understood it. Let me see if I understand it. The seven, if we looked under fund source, the $713,000, that is new federal money that we're going to capture because we're putting this program together. Those are all new dollars, as I understand it. The 66.4 is the Department of Revenue program receipts from the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and the Tax Division. So those are why those are called program receipts. So far, so good. And that came off of page one, the depreciation summary. Then where I stumble is, where does the 468.3 come from? Okay, let's start there.
Senator Wilkin, there are some other fund sources such as retirement and benefits. They occupy space in the state office building. And so that's an accumulation of various other fund sources that are neither federal nor GF program received. One of the things that makes this perhaps a little bit confusing in general is
since a fiscal note represents costs that are different than today, and because we already have general fund in our budgets now in the Department of Transportation, we have the cost in Department Administration, what you're seeing here is just the piece that it will be different as a result of the bill. Now, we will move money in the budget process to accommodate the rent plan. We'll transfer general funds out of Department of Transportation, for instance, but those are not new dollars to the entire system, which is why you don't see them on the fiscal note. But this fiscal note indicates all of the non-general fund sources. Some of the others are the permanent funds, dividend division, the Mental Health Trust Authority. There are some other smaller places where we would be charging them for rent, and their budgets are covered not out of the general fund, but out of some other fund source.
So the Fund 1005, that was the two DORs. The other, the 468, is that some combination of these? So we could total up some group of these and have and come up with 468.
Yes.
Is that in the packet somewhere?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkin, that's correct. It's not done in that form in the packet. The full list would be Division of Retirement and Benefits, very small amounts of central mailroom, about 18,000, 17,000 for the Department of Administration Risk Management Office, 115,000 for the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, about 53,000 for the Alaska State Pension Investment Board, about 21,500 for the Mental Health Trust Authority. There's about 59,500 for Department of Revenue, sort of a miscellaneous mix of funds there. 12,000 Department of Labor Human Resource Investment Council, and 3,700 for the Alaska Police Standards Council.
So it's everything except information technology and, of course, the federal funds. So then that's then the 468 is new dollars that are new depreciation dollars.
New dollars available.
Where does the rent, that's the depreciation component. Where's the cost component in the new dollars?
Actually, if I might, Senator Wilkin, those are two different slices. In other words, we don't say that the exact dollars that come from retirement and benefits will go to depreciation. In a sense, everybody's rent is composed of some elements of direct cost expenditures like janitorial service and some elements of depreciation. However, when you take a look at the overall revenue sources and you take a look at the overall expenditures, it turns out that we're able to cover the depreciation essentially with this new money, even though we don't carve it out, we don't tell retirement and benefits, you're paying just for depreciation and no direct expenses. Everybody's rent, that 88 cents a square foot, is composed of all of the elements. So the benefit of this overall process is that when we look at all of the new revenues that we're able to bring in from this, we are in fact able to cover essentially the depreciation expenditure, which we've never been building up before, and that's part of why we're in the bind we are with respect to our facility maintenance. But it's not a direct one-for-one of who pays which dollars, or who pays which expenses, I should say. There happens to be a nice correlation in that we're able to cover depreciation without adding general funds, but it doesn't map directly in the way I think you were identifying.
Except what we're showing here as new revenue, the 468, is off of this table, which is entitled depreciation. So those are just new depreciation dollars, but we're not charging the agencies any rent today, as I understand it. So if they now pay depreciation from here, and then they also pay something for their janitors and their maintenance and upkeep, that's a new dollar coming out of the agency, is it not, and going into the pot? And wouldn't we use that new dollar to help pay for the program and to fund this sinking fund for maintenance? But we don't show that because we just show the depreciation dollar there. That's where I'm confused.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkin, I can see the source of your confusion. The the table you're looking at, really the column should be new rental funds rather than just depreciation. The reason this page is focused on depreciation was to address Senator Torgerson's question about how are we paying for depreciation without bringing new general fund money into this. So we were trying to show that this total of new money available that we're bringing in is more than enough to cover our depreciation costs.
Oh.
If I could, Senator Wilkin, the janitorial, the fuel oil bill, the electrical bill, maintenance workers, that's already in DOT's and DOA's budget. So we've got the money available to pay that already.
And if we look at retirement benefit funds, $178,900, that's not the depreciable amount for that agency. That is the rent that's going to be charged them?
Yeah. Oh, full rent.
Oh, okay. Of which, of course, part of it is depreciation.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. The word fund available was just intended to show, as Jack pointed out, how is it that we are able to cover depreciation without adding general fund because we're getting all of this other money.
And then why wouldn't the information technology be included in that as new money?
That was already incorporated in the rate structure for their entire program. We had built in a rent component because if we didn't build it in up front, we'd have to go back and adjust all the rates later. So we didn't want it to double count that money.
They're already paying for into the
rates have already been calculated to assume that there would be a charge to them for their space.
And if I could just one more.
Go ahead.
So we've collected this $1.247 million and we're going to apply it up above to operating expenditures. Then there's a change in revenue of $783,000. Where does that number come from?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkin, let's see. Where the change in revenues reflects new money coming in from non-state sources. In other words, although we're bringing in total about $1.5 million to bear on this, when we looked at this change in revenues line, we decided just to count new money coming into the state. In other words, that wouldn't count retirement and benefits, for example, because it's being paid from that fund, even though it's non-GF. So that is just comprised of the 713 in federal receipts, and let's see, that should add the GF program receipts, and it looks like there's another small amount that's in the other fund sources. I'd have to check on that to get back to you, but... maybe the Police Standards Council, another few thousand dollars.
One of the things we discovered in this process was that the typical fiscal note structure doesn't adapt very well to the kind of thing we're talking about. So in some cases, we are trying to prep, fit something into the categories here that just is kind of awkward given the type of program that we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not sure.
This has been horribly confusing. We've struggled with this for a long time, and one of the reasons we took the time we did to put this plan together instead of bringing it forward last year was there was so much work through. And I just want to tell you I appreciate that you're struggling through it as well because it is complex. I think it will. There's no doubt in our minds that it will really pay off. It's complicated to get the thing started, but that's also one reason why we decided that rather than going statewide and covering every single building in the first effort, we needed to get a sizable a pilot, if you will, enough buildings so that we could experience all the different concerns that come up, how to deal with different types of revenue sources, et cetera. It is a massive process to get it going, and we know it will pay off in the long term, but that was one reason for selecting these buildings to begin with, rather than going statewide initially.
Okay. Jack, I'd still like you to walk us through these couple pages that are in this. We're
as you can tell, we're not ready to pass this out today, so we're going to have to figure out a different, fresh approach to getting the numbers back. But at least explain your handout here so that members can take this back and go through your handout.
Sure. I might just add to Annalise's comment, Mr. Chairman and members, that we've been working on this for about 4 years now in developing the rental program and the rates here. It is complex, but we feel pretty comfortable that these numbers are accurate and that it's worth doing it to get the benefit of the program. This is the packet that I was going to be addressing, and the first page is FY01 facilities, ERU summary by building.
We just stapled them all together.
Okay. I'm not sure if they might have been collated in, or you might have another cover page on. Looks like you've all got it. There's a lot of detail here. I could probably spend most of the morning and into the afternoon talking about this. I'll give you a quick overview, and then we'll turn to specific questions. The first couple of pages here give a good summary by building. We've got the 8 buildings in the left-hand column, and then the different cost components of rent broken out, maintenance and operation, DOA admin costs to run the program, small amount of risk management costs that are already in the budget but we're now building into the rental rate, and then annual depreciation on the right-hand column. And those add to your total annual cost. You divide the total annual cost for each building by the usable square feet, and that gives you a rental rate for the building. Turning to the next page.
So you do plan on having 8 separate rates.
Mr. Chairman, that's part of the federal requirements, is that each building has to have its own rental rate.
And if I was to go through this now, the maintenance and operation costs are currently budgeted, and that's actual expenditures.
That's correct.
And then the admin costs reflect your fiscal note.
That's correct also.
And risk management isn't directly allocated to the building, or is it? Is this addition, or is it already budgeted, the risk management?
So these rates are by building also.
Yes, but they're already.
Yes.
Okay.
And again, we didn't want to double count risk management, so we had to separate that piece out because we'd already built that into the rate.
And then the depreciation would be most of our debate's about. Okay. All right.
Just to clarify one point on depreciation, the page we were looking at earlier showed a total depreciation for state agencies of about $1.83 million. The total on this page of $2.11 million reflects the difference. There is private tenants. There's still a fair bit of space in the Atwood building for private leases that have not yet expired, and small amount of private space in one or two other state buildings as well. Anything else on that page, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
The second page, throughout the packet here, we've got some of the same numbers that are essentially sliced differently by either department or by building. So here we've got a breakout for each building and the agencies in those buildings, as well as the square footage occupied by each agency. I think it's pretty straightforward. Any questions there? The third page here gets into kind of the nitty-gritty of calculating the rental rates and what non-GF fund sources are available to pay that. We've got a breakdown by department. We show column next to it show the GF amounts that are transferred from what DOT is spending today and DOA is spending today out to the departments to pay their rent with. And then we move over into columns F through I, show the new federal fund and other non-GF sources that are available to pay rent with. And then we get over in the last columns to the total rent paid by the agency. Turning to the next page, headed budget, total expenditures, revenue detail. This page, again, is a department breakdown. Here we wanted to separate out the Atwood building is sort of a creature of its own. It's administered by Department of Administration rather than DOT. So we wanted to separate that out from the other facilities in calculating the rental rate. So that's what we've done here, is just provide that breakdown.
You currently have a manager for the Atwood building?
Mr. Chairman, we have a contractual property manager. It's currently Pacific Tower Properties.
Thank you. Good.
I wasn't planning to go through any column by column on this page unless there were other questions. The next page is a continuation, again showing Atwood versus the other building. Okay, the next page, headed budget summary, revised allocation, is again the detail that goes into calculating the rental rates, total maintenance and operations, depreciation, and again separating out Atwood from the other building. The following page is the other half of that spreadsheet. Again, there's a lot of numbers here. We didn't pass this out the first time because we almost felt it was too much detail, but we were asked for the detail, and so this is it. Again, I think the key point to remember is that we've done a thorough job here of looking at all the factors that go into the rental rate. It's not just something that's been pulled out of the air. And when you set about trying to do it in a thorough manner, this is the kind of detail that you do have to go through. Okay, the next page is headed budget, Atwood transfer detail. This page just provides some of the specific breakdowns for the Atwood building itself. This was really primarily for the benefit of the departments that were moving from the Frontier building into the Atwood building, to show them what was happening with their budgets. There was some concern there to make sure that they weren't going to be taking any program hits for paying their rent. So this page was intended to provide that information. Moving on to the next page, and take four more here to go and we'll be done. This is again, another slice, another perspective on the rental rates that shows department by department breakdown, as well as the buildings that each department occupies, again, running through all the various components, maintenance and operations, depreciation, and so on, and totaling up in the right-hand columns there to their total rental rate. The next page is the same continuation for the rest of the department. You might note at the bottom of that page, Legislative Affairs is included in our rental program, and that's for Division of Legislative Finance and Legislative Audit in the State Office Building, as well as the Ombudsman in the Court Plaza Building, and I believe it's the Print Shop in the Community Building. So they would be included. They, again, the money would be transferred to the legislature's budget to pay the rent there, so there would be no budget impact or cut required to pay that.
And the next page just finishes up that comparison. Okay, and then the last two pages here, essentially the same information. It's just collated or totaled by building rather than by department. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any questions of any of our testifiers, Senator Wilkins?
I go back to the fiscal note and see if I understand this. The 468 that we show there in other is the summary that's shown here on page 1. With the exception of federal funds, ISF, ABC Board, and the tax division. So that's the 468.3. So then the question is this. So when this goes into effect, we're going to hand those other 8 or 9 agencies a bill for $468,000, which we're going to say to them, this is your rent. And they're going to have to pay it. Where does that money come from? Do they then go back and increase their budgets to us? Or they take it out of program? Or where does that 468 come from, those 8 agencies?
Senator Wilkins, one of the reasons we had incorporated this into the governor's budget was because of the complexity of all of the transactions necessary. So using the example of retirement and benefits, we said to them, this will be your rent bill for the space you occupy in the state office building. They then had a budget increment in their budget for retirement and benefits funds to cover that rent, recognizing that that's as much a legitimate expense of operating the retirement and benefits system as any other of their direct costs. And if they had been in a leased building, for instance, they could have been having that charged to them for many years. So in any of those programs where we had other funds, there is a budget transaction. We gave Senator Torgerson, and we'd be happy to provide to others of you if you wanted, a packet that had all of the budget detail pages so that you could see as a group, here are all the transactions that were related to general fund items, and then a package of the transactions we had in the budget for the non-general fund items. And that's right, we did attach it to the fiscal note, I forgot.
So the 468 then, what it amounts to then is match money for us to claim the $713,000.
Not necessarily match money, no.
Well, I mean, in sort of a loose term, we can't get the 713 without charging our departments the 468.
Exactly. We have to treat the entities within the building the same way. So that what the federal government doesn't want, for instance, is for us to give a free ride to everybody else and charge them. So we've taken the whole building and charged every one of the agencies in the building.
Okay. So now we know where the money came from, and then we're going to go up in operating expenditures and decide to spend it on, we've already talked about the two people. Then the contractual is, what equals the $1.104 million in contractual?
I think everything except the other four numbers are the administrative costs, and everything else is in the contractual line item because it's either a payment to DOT to pay the janitor and utilities and those kinds of things, or it's a payment we make now on the Atwood building for the same kinds of things. I think every other expense is a contractual expense. We're buying something from somewhere.
All right, but then it goes into the sinking fund. We take it out as a contractual obligation. Is that the steps along the way? The agency pays the sinking fund. We reach in through appropriation, take the money out, and appropriate each year for this contractual line, which could be roof replacement, janitorial, whatever. Is that the steps?
Okay. And the appropriations out of the building fund will cover both annual operating types of expenditures like maintenance, and then we'll have capital expenditures if we're proposing to do a roof replacement or replace a boiler or whatever. So in either event, whether it's an annual operating expense or a longer-term capital expense, it will still come to the legislature for appropriation out of that fund, which gives you the check and balance that, in fact, we have to be displaying to you reasonable costs, both for annual maintenance and for what we plan to do essentially out of the depreciation account.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative James, you had a comment?
I have a question. My understanding, and it has to do with the fiscal note,
is that my understanding that we're going to be accumulating, and what she just said kind of makes a little bit of sense to me in that response, but that we're going to be accumulating in this fund. And then I was of the impression that when we had to make major decisions on depreciable items or so forth, that then we would have that before us to be budgeting and appropriating. So the way this is drafted is it looks like we're going to appropriate it every year. There's going to be anything left over. And that was the thing that was bothering me, that the way the fiscal note was designed. And so it seems to me like we ought to be separating out and in the fiscal note show the amount of expenses that we're having every year that we're currently having and show a pool of money accumulating, whereby when we needed it to replace these things, then an appropriation would be appropriate. So that was my understanding. I just wanted to put that on the record.
I didn't
necessarily agree with this method of showing the fiscal note.
I think Representative James has flagged a good point. What we were simply trying to indicate here is that there won't be any money sort of that is hanging out somewhere. I mean, all of the money each year will go into the building's fund, but she's absolutely right. We don't necessarily appropriate every dollar out of that fund within each fiscal year. I mean, that's part of the point of accumulating it. So I think she has flagged a good thing that, again, our fiscal note structure doesn't really accommodate this very well.
Mr. Chairman, if I could clarify, our intent on that contractual line was showing agency rent payments into the public building fund, not expenditures out of the public building fund.
So we can adjust the fiscal note to clarify that, in other words, none of the money will get deposited into the general fund or the permanent fund or any other location. That will remain in the building fund, but we will clarify that it won't all be appropriated out on a year-by-year basis.
Yeah, we need to know, because this does spend it all. I mean, it gives you the authority to go forward.
And that was not our intention. Our intention was just to ensure that all of the payments actually got deposited into the fund that's established by this bill. So we'll make that clarification.
Senator Wilkins?
So there wouldn't be anything that would restrict you, or you could put in place a policy, or the legislature could ask you to say you only spend 80% of the pot every year, and 20% is a set aside for upcoming capital needs. We could do something like that, could we not?
Well, actually, what we would be doing is coming forward to you every year with our recommendations for what kinds of building elements need to be replaced and so on, and you would evaluate that. We would tell you, and our hope, of course, is to get to a point where we have real professional management and we can say we anticipate that we will need to replace the boiler in about 5 years, for instance. So as we get into this, we'll have the kind of professional information available to say this is you know, what we're accumulating. We're in a little bit of a difficult situation now because, of course, we know that there are a number of deferred maintenance needs for these buildings above and beyond what we could possibly cover with the rental structure. So we will still be needing to address major backlogs of deferred maintenance. This is intended to prospectively ensure that we don't get back in the same deferred maintenance problem in the future.
But could we not put in, I don't know the correct wording for it, but could we not have a policy that says each year when you come with a request for 80% of what has been put into the fund for the prior year? So there's always a 20% set aside that would start to accumulate, and that, in my mind, would be the capital money that's available for that boiler. When the argument is correct to spend that money, couldn't we do that through policy or through directive or some way?
There wouldn't be no reason why you couldn't, but I think perhaps a more a different approach that might work better would be for us to come to you and say, as we've identified the building needs in this building, here's what we see as a schedule of when we'll need to do what. Because it might turn out that on a year-to-year basis, the 80% rule may not make sense when you look at the needs of the particular building. It might be that in a certain year you would only do 60, and in another year you might do 95, depending on the situation of that building. So my suggestion would be that we come back to you each year with that kind of a programmatic approach, and then you could evaluate on a building-by-building basis what makes sense.
One last thing. The money that's dumped in isn't earmarked for the 8 buildings. Once it goes in, it can be spread across all 8 assets. Chairman, it isn't earmarked.
It's not earmarked to a given building. It's for the buildings in the school. We've just begun a process of putting together some groups by building to look at all the existing identified physical problems with the buildings right now. We've got DOT's list, our own list, and we're right now going to do like a 3, 5, 6 year capital plan, which we would bring back for all buildings in the pool. I'm quite sure that that's going to be, that the needs identified are going to be greatly in excess of what the rental rate is going to generate in the next decade. But we're going to at least begin to prioritize those as to which are the most reasonably funded out of the public buildings fund.
Representative James, do you have a comment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that I really don't like the fiscal note on here. I'd like to have it amended to indicate, and if they need to have an appropriation into the fund, which I don't think they do, it either should be different than the income at the top, or if they do need an appropriation into the fund, it should be under miscellaneous, not under contractual. So I think this is misleading, and the other, they did kind of mention the comment that I was worrying about, because of course there's not going to be enough money in this to take care of the ongoing maintenance. We're going to have some catch up. Maybe after 20 years we might have enough in here to keep things going, but not right away. And that's treated as a separate issue, and the appropriation of the money that's used out of this residual that's in here has to be appropriated, I believe, every year, and I want to make that perfectly clear. That was my intent. So I'd like to have that number down there before this fiscal note is accepted, to separate out, if that's where it's dumped into contractual, put it down there as to how much is going to be in the first year anticipated to be carried over in the fund.
Thank you. Okay, we've been summoned to the floor, so we'll set this aside and continue working and working and working.
We're making progress.
We're making progress. We are. Yeah, we're going to understand this bill, you know, May 10th. Tomorrow we will convene at 9 a.m. and we have capital. It looks like supplemental. Looks like we'll have Anna Lee back before. Anything else to come before us today? Okay, seeing none, we'll adjourn until 9 a.m. tomorrow.